Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joined by 12-year NFL vet Wade Smith. Wade, there's obviously a lot of problems over there off Kirby. You know, I think this time of year, probably in the NFL, I think everybody on their exit exams and exit meetings and all that kind of stuff. I think a large percentage of the teams around the NFL, they're having conversations of concerns, whether that's on the offensive side of the football or on the defense side of the football. Look, wait, hell, I listened to some KC radio last week, with Buffalo radio the week before.
Yeah.
And it's everybody's talking about game time management and too many penalties and play calling and what the problems are offensively and defensively. And so the Texans aren't the only teams in the country that are dealing with problems. And unfortunately, you've got some problems on both sides of the football at the coordinator position. And look, I think Romeo Crennel has done an admirable job this year overcoming the loss of several players, not just superstars, Wade, and not just at critical positions, but he's done an admirable job overcoming games with players missing at all three levels of the defense. You're talking about Clowney's gone, J.J. Watt, boom. McKinney missed a couple of games, right? Then you jump to the secondary, and at one point in time, at the end of the season, Gibson was out. Roby missed extended time. J.J. missed extended time. I think Reed didn't miss any games, did he?
I don't think he missed any. If he did, I know he missed portions of games. Yeah. He would go out of games, but I don't remember him missing any games.
A big guy that we hadn't talked about, Wade, at all, Dylan Cole. Dylan Cole hurt when they lost him on this football team at the linebacker position when it comes to covering backs out of the backfield and having that speed to cover tight ends and stuff. But he did an admirable job overcoming those situations and continuing to give this team a chance. So I think first and foremost, before we dive in on Romeo Crennel, I think that is a feather in my man's cap, and he deserves to be saluted for the fact that his guys held on to the rope and creatively, schematically, they were able to do some things defensively that allowed the Texans to win 11 football games this year.
Yeah, if I looked at the defense of the Texans, I would say overall for the season they overachieved.
Yeah.
Because there were multiple times this season where going into ball games, I had no confidence that the defense was going to be able to play at a very high level, and I was expecting the offense to be the one to carry the team, and the exact opposite thing happened. Yeah. The defense stepped up and played really good ball games. And so I think when you look at a guy like Tashaun Gibson, losing him for this playoff run, losing him to go against Travis Kelce, that was a huge factor in a lot of the struggles that you saw this time when the Texans played Kansas City versus the first time. And there was losses like that, talking about personnel-wise, that were in and out of the lineup, and that affected what happened with the defense throughout the year.
Yeah, and I want to do this in a way, Wade, of not – I mean, we're not pointing blame. It doesn't matter. I hate playing a blame game. The reality of it is that if we're real, Romeo Crennel did an admirable job. If we're getting down to the nitty-gritty, Baltimore ran through them like mess through a goose, and they had no answers. They had no answers whatsoever. KC, for three quarters, got outscored 51-7. Was it 51 or 52?
51.
51-7. KC scored on seven straight drives, and the defense never had a chance to even remotely slow them down. And those are two things, Wade, that I think when you get into the offseason, the measuring stick or the bar is that of Baltimore, KC, in this instance, I guess you can look at Tennessee if you'd like to. But
damn, it hurts to hear you say that, man. It's painful. I hate to even put that even out there, but it's actually true.
Well, they're there. They're there. The I mean, I don't know that. I don't know that. That's. We'll talk about that later. But at the end of the day, you got to look at this in the AFC. I mean, I think Kansas City is the team right now that's playing at the highest level. And I think Baltimore is the team that over a 16-17 week span played at the highest level. And so those are the two standards that you have to go, okay, where do we stack up against those guys? And truth of the matter is, the when the teams were fully loaded, fully healthy, you didn't stack up at all defensively. And so there's got to be some things changed on the defensive side of the football. We mentioned it yesterday. Romeo Crennel, 73 years old. I imagine that that's going to work itself out. I would imagine that Romeo Crennel is going to retire rather than be fired. I would imagine that he's going to ease his way out and enjoy, have a little retirement party and move on. But there's some concerns outside of the coordinator, Wade. The pass rush, with or without 99, they're problems, baby. There's problems on that side of the football.
Yeah. I mean, they were unable to get any pressure on Pat Mahomes. I don't care who you have defending Travis Kelce. If Pat Mahomes gets to pat the ball back there 3-4 seconds in the pocket, get moved off his spot, he's going to pick you apart. I don't care who's over there. I don't care if it's Deion trying to cover Travis Kelce. It's going to be a very difficult task to slow that guy down. And then they struggled rushing the passer to even get him off the spot. And then times that they did get him off the spot, they weren't disciplined in their rush. And so he killed them running the ball, never on design runs. It was always on scrambles out of the pockets. He had over 50 yards rushing. And then he killed them throwing the ball once he got out of the pocket multiple times to Travis Kelce, multiple times to receivers. And so if you're not going to be disciplined in your rush and you're not going to get home, then you're going to have a long day at the office. And that's what you saw against Kansas City. And it wasn't just Kansas City. It happened throughout the season, especially when J.J. went out. So they're going to have to figure out a way to drastically improve that pass rush in order to compete with a team like the Kansas City Chiefs and the other top teams in the AFC.
They got to go get somebody, Wade. Yeah. Right? I mean, they got to go get somebody. And I don't know who's going to be out there. And I'm sure there's going to be some free agents out there that pop. I saw a list this morning. I didn't take notes when I was reading it, but I believe it was the top 50 free agents in 2020, and Hunter Henry, an old Arkansas tight end, was one of them. So that's I got the link forwarded to me from somebody that's an Arkansas fan. So that's really when I started looking at it. I want to dig into that thing and see who's going to become available down the road. But ultimately, they got to find some help up front, and they got to find it in a hurry. The secondary, Wade, I'm on the defensive side of the football. You know, I'm higher on this secondary than most people are. I believe that, as you mentioned, versus Kansas City and multiple times throughout the year, when receivers and tight ends are able to run two patterns in one play, then they're probably going to get open. A lot of times they're going to get open. And so I don't think that there's as much work, that needs to be added to this secondary. They've got to get better. There's no doubt about it. But I think if you make a scheme adjustment and if you find some guys up front that can get after the passer a little bit, I think that the secondary improves dramatically. Where do you sit on the secondary?
I tell you what, it all starts with Bradley Roby, because Bradley Roby showed that he could be a number one corner for the Houston Texans. When he's healthy, he played at a very high level, but he's a free agent. So you're going to have to pay him. You're going to have to pay him top dollar, because he had a year that was good enough that puts him in the category, especially with the way the market goes up each and every year. You're going to have to pay him a significant amount of money to bring him back to the Houston Texans. And if you don't, then now you're doing the same thing where you're going to have to find somebody else on the street to replace his role. Jonathan Joseph, I doubt that he came out and said that he plans on playing this next season. He plans on continuing his career. I would be surprised if the Texans gave him a new deal, because they didn't even play him in the last few games of the year. Of course, a couple of games he was hurt, but this last game he didn't see the field at all, and they were struggling on defense. I was expecting to see Jonathan Joseph out there on the field just for his veteran leadership, his ability to diagnose plays and see things out there, and he never made his way onto the field. And so to me, that tells me that they've kind of moved on from Jonathan Joseph. And so now you're talking about Gerrion Connolly, you're talking about Hargraves, you're talking about, of course, you're going to have Reed and Gibson coming back at the safety position to die. I think that the safety position is set. You're good there. But at the corner position, you're going to have to keep or get a new solidified number one spot, number one corner. I think they're good with Hargraves as a slot guy, which is fine. You got Lonnie Johnson, a guy that played a bunch of snaps out there, and it started off pretty well against Travis Kelce. But, it's Travis Kelce, and eventually he was overmatched and taking advantage of. You got to hope that he improves next season. But, like I said, it starts with Bradley Roby. That's a big key to the puzzle with the defensive backfield. If they can bring him back, then I think for the most part you have enough in the defensive backfield to move forward with. But it all starts with the pass rush. I don't care how good your corners are and your safeties are. If you can't get after the quarterback, it won't matter what happens behind him.
Wade, two guys that I've got on my list in different scenarios, and I want to run it by you. DJ Reader, obviously we're both high on the guy, and he's a big piece of this defense at this point in time. Do you believe that with all the needs as far as a true pass rusher, that DJ Reader will be a priority in re-signing him and getting him back as a free agent?
I think they're going to attempt their damnedest to bring him back, but the more each day passes, the more I believe he's going to become a free agent, unrestricted free agent, and somebody's going to pay him top dollar, and he's not going to come back. I listened to Bill O'Brien in his press conference the other day. He was talking about, you know, he wants DJ Reader back, of course. That's definitely a good sound thought process to want to have a guy of his caliber back on your roster. He does everything that you want on the field and off the field at his position. But it's also, he said, it's got to make sure it's something that's right for DJ and it's right for us. And so I'm sure they have a certain kind of budget or a position slotted for a certain amount of money that they allocate. This is what we're going to pay somebody that plays nose tackle for the Houston Texans. And I think what DJ can get on the open market is going to surpass that. Yeah. And so that's why I would be surprised if he comes back.
Well, when it's all said and done, I mean, they can't pay him all. I mean, they can't pay him all. They can't re-sign him all. And they got a lot of decisions to make over the next couple of years, right?
I don't know if that's true, Clint. You can't pay him all. You can't pay them all, but you can pay all the ones that are legitimate players that you want back. If you see what I'm saying? There's enough money that the Texans have available under the cap, and there's enough money because the cap goes up each and every year. When I hear that you can't pay them all, I don't buy into that line of thinking.
What do you think about this, Wade? I had a conversation with a guy a couple days ago about this. What do you think about Zach Cunningham? Zach Cunningham's playing obviously an extremely high level right now. I believe he's got 1 year left on his contract because he came in with Deshaun, right?
Yeah.
And so he's got 1 year on his contract. Is that right? Zach Cunningham came in with Deshaun?
Yeah.
So he's got 1 year left on his contract. He's a guy that's playing at a high enough level right now to where there's some serious value in moving him if that were something that came about. How would you
moving
feel?
Him? What do you mean? Yeah. You mean like trading?
Trading? Yeah.
You want to trade Zach?
No. Hell no. I don't want to. It's just a conversation that I had.
Okay.
No. Hell no. I don't. I think Zach. To me, Zach Cunningham is the ideal 2020 linebacker in this league. That if you've got his rights, you got to keep him.
Yeah.
But when you start looking at the linebacker position and the starters, I mean, guys are under contract. And you're gonna and somebody's gonna have to be, not necessarily at that position, but somebody in that mix is gonna have to be moved. And if when you talking about moving guys, it's got to be a guy with some kind of value. And I'm just thinking of a guy that's got a high value right now at the moment.
Yeah, I would be extremely surprised if they tried to move somebody like Zach Cunningham. I would be surprised if they moved any of their start. If they were gonna move somebody, to me, you would move somebody like JJ. Like JJ would be somebody that I could consider, because you got to think about it. Zach Cunningham is 24 years old.
Look, I ain't disagreeing with you.
You don't get in the. I mean, I just don't think it's a good business practice to get in the habit of trading away guys that are 24 years old that are playing at a very high level.
Yeah.
And you can actually take care of Zach Cunningham early. He hasn't achieved the Pro Bowl status yet, so that can save you some dollars right there. But pay him early so that you. But see, I don't think you need to trade any of these guys. That's
okay.
My whole point.
Yeah, gotcha.
I think there's enough money to go around that you can pay everybody that you feel like you want to be this tough, smart, dependable Houston Texan. They don't have so many great, talented players over there to where, all right, we're going to run out of money. I just don't see that as a realistic deal.
Got it. Fair enough. Well, hey, look, coming up at 3:35, we got Radio.com Sports MLB Insider Tony Gwynn Junior, so don't go anywhere. I want to lead into that way. What I want to do, man, is I want to revisit what's going on over at Minute Maid Park with the Houston Astros before we jump into that conversation with Tony Gwynn at 3:35. So next, right here on Sports Radio 610, Wade Smith and I will jump into some of the Astros conversation. There's one guy that's involved that his ass is dead to me. He is dead to me, Wade Smith, and I'm going to tell you who that is next.
We're addressing the problem. We apologize to our fans and all of our sponsors and the city in general, and we're going to move forward. We cleaned house. It's behind us, and we're going to make this right, and we're going to play baseball come spring.
That's Astros owner Jim Crane speaking on – say it again. Oh, I'm sorry, speaking yesterday. I'm talking today, dang it. Speaking on the firing of the Astros manager,
there you go,
AJ Hinch and GM Jeff Luno. By the way, for the record, Crane did pronounce Luno Lunau in his presser, for the record.
So what is the correct way to pronounce? Because I always thought it was Luno.
I think it's Luno, but I'm just telling you what Crane said, bro. So I'm not the only guy in town that'll jack up a name every now and then or jack up a word every now and then. So my man Crane over there got pockets around his ankles, and he ain't above jacking up somebody's name every now. That's right. So as you know, obviously the report came out. Wade, I mentioned earlier that I had a chance to read it, and again, it was only 9 pages, so I took the time and really dug into it. And there's several things that really stood out to me. But one thing is that I didn't mention earlier is that Alex Cora, his ass is dead to me.
Oh,
he's dead to me.
I'm sure he's dead to a lot of people around Major League Baseball right now.
When you look at this thing, and I think the players, obviously, for the right reasons, I agree with the players. Not, I think it would be, I shouldn't say agree. I think it would be very difficult to hold every player that was involved, because the report stated that it was widespread. Damn near everybody was guilty. They're on other teams now. And if you were to discipline every player that was involved, it essentially would decimate the Astros organization for a year, however long. And I think ultimately, Wade, to me, that's a little extensive. That's a little much to really give an organization the death penalty. I mean, you talk about death penalties. You don't allow them to play baseball the following year. I think it would have been very difficult to find all the guys that were guilty, and I think it would have been a little bit much from a punishment standpoint to do that to an organization. But nonetheless, in the report, I think it stated very clearly that Alex Cora was the one that started this.
He was the mastermind.
He was. You said it yesterday, brother. You said it yesterday, and my man.
And I read it from the Athletic, so right. This wasn't my deal, but right. I definitely read that on the Athletic that Alex Cora was the mastermind behind the entire scheme.
Right, right. So he started. He began the team's use of video replay to learn signs and would often call the review room to get the information, yeah. Right? And when this thing first started, Wade, and I mean, some of y'all may be clear too, some of you may not, but it was him electronically figuring out which number was what pitch and what pitch was coming, what number in the sequence was going to be the next pitch. And they were figuring that out electronically, which is hard in itself, right?
Yeah.
And then the second part of that was they were having a hard time figuring it all out, signaling it to the runner at second base, and then that runner at second base signaling it to the hitter.
Mm-hmm.
In comes Carlos Beltran. How can we get it to the hitter quicker?
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden we're banging garbage cans, yeah. Right? We're moving TVs closer. Yeah. It's one of those things, too, where the Major League Baseball goes, I'm reading this report, bro, and I'm just thinking, as you mentioned yesterday, what the hell did you think was going to happen? Wait, at one point, bro, they let the organizations move the TV that was being used for replay, yeah, to a room closer to the dugout.
Easy access.
Easier. It was already easy.
Yeah, easier access.
Right. So never mind that the electronics that were in center field that were supposed to be used for, I think player development was the term that they used in there, wasn't it? I mean, essentially they were videoing either hitters or pitchers or catchers for that matter, but somehow a combination, and they were coaching based off it, which I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah.
Right. But throw that electronics out there and then give them a feed into the dugout over here and then let them move a TV closer to the dugout. I mean, at what point in time do you go, really? I mean, it's as you said, they can't drop a 12-pack of donuts in your face knowing you're a big fella.
So the answer is then, why are you so mad at Alex Cora? They put the donuts in front of him. The man was going to eat. He's hungry.
But I'm mad at that.
He's trying to win,
hey,
baby.
Hey, I can't – look, here's the deal. I can't sit there and go, well, I blame him for what they did. I'm pissed off. Like, Alex Cora is dead to me because he was the original one that started getting players involved and even gave them the thought that this was possible.
Yeah.
Somebody had to be the guy that brought it to their attention, And Carlos Beltran took it a step further. And so those two guys right there, they're all guilty, man. They're all responsible. I get it. But those two cats right there, they're dead to me, man. I can't understand why or how that kind of person's mind thinks of how can I get over on these cats to give us an advantage.
That's baseball. That's baseball, though, man.
Fair enough.
Every time, like, I'm going back and looking at different articles and looking at different reports on ESPN and various news outlets, and they're talking about the history of baseball and all the different things that have gone on over the years, and just little things. And I'm not talking about, like, electronically stealing signals, but I'm talking about using rosin and things that you tell, you know, the kids to try to figure out, like, at the youth level, right, ways to figure out, right, to just game the system a little bit or get yourself an edge. It's like playing spades. I've been saying this for a couple of days now.
Explain playing spades.
In the game of spades, there's certain rules to the game of spades, right? But if somebody you're playing with in the game does not pay attention and the other person that they're going against breaks the rules, if you don't call them on or catch them, then it's going to give them an advantage, and you're going to do that. And the way spades is set up, it's either if you don't cheat a little bit, it's just a pure game of luck. It's just pure luck. So the way you want to create your own luck is you cheat a little bit. You play a spade early when you didn't need to, when you might have had a heart in your hand. I had a suit, and I'm going to play this spade right here to steal this book so I can get to my points and run a set on you or something like that. So that's part of the game. So, and that's what I want to ask Tony Gwynn about is like how bad is this really? Because everything that I've known and come across and noticed in baseball since I was a little kid is there's always somebody trying to game the system and beat the system and get an edge. So how bad really is this particular method of cheating? I just think that they didn't need to do it.
Right.
That's the whole thing about it is they didn't need to do it. Alex Cora, when he had the original idea, like, oh, I know what we can do. We're going to use these devices they put in front of us. But, like, y'all was good, man.
Yeah.
Y'all were damn good. You didn't need it.
Well, you know, when you...
I mean, it just didn't make sense to me.
When they ended up stopping, it was because it was essentially ineffective. Like, it was just too difficult to get everything back and forth, and it was more disruptive and distracting than it was beneficial. Coming up next, we got Tony Gwynn Jr., radio.com sports MLB insider. So stick with us. Stay tight. Stay tuned. Buckle up. Turn it up. All them good things. We got Tony Gwynn Jr. coming at you. Wade, you know one more guy that he can kick rocks?
Who that?
AJ Hinch. His ass can kick rocks,
damn,
coach.
Damn, you got to explain this one to me.
Look, man, you can't tell me that you know about what's going on, and you and I talked a little bit about it. You ain't got the guts to stand up and make guys stop, which there could have been a dynamic in that locker room and in that clubhouse. Dang, I got a head coach and locker room out of my mind and clubhouse and manager in it. But I understand there may be a dynamic in there where you don't necessarily have, the utmost power, maybe the all the power and have the ability to really have your finger on the pulse of the clubhouse. I understand that dynamic. I get it.
Yeah.
But to me, man, like to know about it, to destroy TVs and then come on my TV in my house and talk about culture and talk about the great group of guys you got to lead me to believe to come in here. I'm sitting here talking to you about the Astros, talking about, man, AJ Hinch, that's my dude, man. He got swag. He's got the culture over there. I love the culture. Man, he led me to, and the whole time their ass was over there cheating. Yeah, man, he can kick rocks too.
Man, I got to go against you there, man. And I'm going to put it this way. AJ Hinch's job as a manager is to basically be the ultimate finesser. If you can finesse egos, you make sure that guys are feeling good about themselves, just making little subtle changes here and there, that's pretty much the ultimate job of a Major League Baseball manager. And so for him to take a hard line against his team that was doing something like that, he's maybe hearing about these things, rumblings, and figuring out all this is going on. If he takes a hard line against it, you could possibly make a rift in the clubhouse.
Yeah,
and if you make a rift in the clubhouse, that ultimately could affect what's going on the diamond. And so it's hard for me to hold guys to certain standards in Major League Baseball when it is it's like honor amongst thieves. There's so many people in this league that do things to try to get an edge. It's like to hold him to a standard that he's like he's got to be utmost integrity and figure out a way to be. It's like you're barking up the wrong tree. Why would you expect somebody to have that type of thought process when guys, since they were little kids, tried to figure out ways to game the system? I can't be mad at AJ Hinch. I think this is just a product of this is baseball. You know what I mean? And so it's something that's going on all over the Major League Baseball. And so this was something that crossed over the line too far, apparently. But is it really?
Yeah.
Like, is it really that bad?
Is your ability to be a fan? You talked about bragging rights, and the reason you're a fan is so hopefully your team one day gets to a point where you can call your buddy. I can call my buddy up in New England, and I can go, "Hey, man, Mastro's whooping ass, boy. Y'all are in trouble." I mean, is that aspect, does that bother you at all? Because we've been walking around with our chest poked out on these Astros for a minute. You know, I mean, it's ultimately. How does that make you feel about being a fan?
People are going to talk regardless. I'm sure it's going to be more difficult if you're a true Astro fan and you can't go around talking noise like you might have talked before. But it doesn't take away the feeling that you had from winning that World Series and coming off of Harvey. That stuff doesn't go away. You can't take away those moments. But it is something that you definitely it's tough to deal with, to know that your team took it to that level. Especially when it wasn't necessary, because it taints a really good group of guys that are hell of a group of baseball players that could have done it without the help. It just makes its people say, "Yeah, but." And anytime somebody says, "Yeah," I mean, especially here in Houston, championships and asterisks go hand in hand. And this was the opportunity. You didn't need it.
I listened to a national show this morning. They call them the Houston Asterisks. Just saying.
Damn.
Just saying. It hurt my heart, man. Hurt my heart. Coming up next, we got Tony Gwynn Jr. That's radio.com sports MLB insider Tony Gwynn Jr. We got him on Sports Radio 610 next. Yeah, they do. And I'm joined by my man Wade Smith, 12-year NFL vet. And also, let's get to it, man. On the line is radio.com sports MLB insider Tony Gwynn Jr. Insider calls are brought to you by the new gas-powered Sprinter from Mercedes-Benz Vans. Tony, how you doing, my man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on today.
Man, thank you. Thank you for coming on, brother. Appreciate you taking the time out of your day. Hey, I guess just your first response, man, let's start with the penalties that were handed down from Major League Baseball and the commissioner on the Astros. Before all the firing and everything, just the penalties that were handed down, is that kind of what you expected? Was it a little more severe? What are your thoughts on those penalties originally?
No, I think it was right where I expected it to be. I knew based on the memo that went out after, you know, the Red Sox and Yankees got fined, we kind of had a starting point to at least know where the parameters were going to start at, and you knew it was going to be heavy. I honestly thought they would, you know, not only would they take the first couple of picks in the draft, I thought they would, you know, maybe take away some international signing money, but they stayed away from that. And let's not get it twisted. The losing a first round and a second round pick in back to back years is a big deal, regardless of where people think the Astros may have ended up picking anyway. In terms of Jeff Luhnow and AJ Hinch, I think that was kind of what I expected. They had to send a message. In terms of integrity, and I think they felt like they did.
What did you think when Jim Crane dismissed both of those guys from the ball club? Were you surprised at that turn of events, or is there something you kind of expected to happen?
I mean, I expected it to happen. I didn't expect it to happen like that, like to open up the press conference with, "Hey, I've decided to dismiss Jeff Luhnow and AJ Hinch." I didn't think it would go down that way. I thought they would announce the suspension, and maybe if he was going to fire them, it would come some time later. But he wasted no time, and I think by him going ahead and firing Jeff Luhnow and AJ Hinch, it almost puts a lot of pressure on Boston for whatever's to come in terms of Alex Cora.
Tony, what about the – Wade and I are both former NFL guys, and so I don't know that being in a clubhouse is real similar to being in a locker room, but where we come from, there are meetings that are designed to relay messages from the NFL or from the front office eventually to the players. A big part of the report is that Luno did not ultimately relay the message and Hinch did not enforce the message obviously thorough enough. I mean, what are the meetings in place to get that message from the Major League Baseball to the players?
I mean, something of that kind of serious nature, it would go exactly as you kind of put it. You know, GM may not come down and have a face-to-face. He may send that message through the manager, but something like that is getting back to the players one way or the other. I think obviously it turns out to be true, that's something that is a fireable offense, because ultimately if the players are going to do what the players are going to do, that is a fact. And I'm not saying that the players should have got off for it. Ultimately, it would have been hard to discipline, try to figure out who did what, when they did it, how they benefited from it. But in terms of the management, that's where the buck stops. And if that wasn't communicated, or if it was communicated and ignored, there should have been a way in which, and I know it's reported that AJ Hinch ripped out some TVs and told everybody his disapproval. But ultimately, when it was put back up, nothing was done about it. And I think that's where everybody got in trouble. Had AJ Hinch stuck with his guns and just refuse to allow it, we would be sitting in a different spot right now, I think.
So, Tony, looking at this from the perspective of Major League Baseball and the sanctions that were brought down, this is a pretty serious situation with this cheating and the sign stealing using electronic devices. But looking at it from the player level, that lower level of it, how far over the line is what the Astros did? Because when I think about baseball, there guys push the limits every single day, every single way to get an opportunity to get an edge. So how far over the line is what the Astros and some of the other organizations did?
I mean, listen, we would be fools to think that the Astros and the Red Sox are supposedly the only teams doing it. Now, they're the ones who seemingly have gotten caught. In my opinion, what the Astros were doing completely blows up the line, honestly. Like, this isn't, you know, a guy getting on second base, decoding, you know, whether it's first sign after two or first sign after one, and finding a way to relate it. Remind you, there's an at-bat taking place. You only have so much time to figure it out and get it in. What the Astros are said to have done is have direct knowledge of what was going down, sequences, and being able to get it to the hitter in live time. That's a game changer for a lot of guys. Now, don't get me wrong, the Astros have one of the best rosters with or without any of this nonsense going on in all of baseball. But that doesn't change the fact that they had a clear advantage by how they were using technology. Listen, technology has been used in baseball for a very long time. Video's been around a very long time. I can honestly say on any team I've ever been on, nobody was using it in the way that the Astros were using it.
Tony, what about – I mean, look, we hadn't stood at the plate, man. I mean, Pete Rose came out. Pete Rose came out, I don't know, a month ago or 2 months ago, I don't know what it was, and said that he found it hard to believe that a hitter could – all that could take place in time to really help the hitter. Man, you stood at the plate. I mean, how – distracting would it be if you're looking for that, then you got a guy on the bump that's throwing 98 at you. I mean, I gotta believe that off. I mean, it's cheating. It's cheating. It is what it is. There's no debating that. But how difficult would that process be as a Major League Baseball hitter standing at the plate with pitchers in 2019, 2020 throwing the ball the way they're throwing it?
It may be difficult at first, but if it's a system as this is reported to be, where you knew exactly what the keys were to know exactly what was coming, that's a different ball game. If this is a one-off or you guys might have done it a couple times, it would probably be more difficult because you're still trying to figure out, you know, what the banging is, when I should – if I should trust it even in some cases. And I think over time, as you get better at that, those things that may have been difficult early on become a little bit easier because you're doing it more consistently. So, listen, it doesn't take away the fact that you still got to go up there and hit the ball, like regardless of whether you – and that's the funny thing. Even some of the clips I've seen when the banging has been going on, it doesn't guarantee a hit. You still have to line the ball up, square it up, and hit it well. So that's not to be taken away from any of the hitters. But as a hitter having stood in that box, if I can eliminate two or three other pitches and know for a fact there's a certain pitch coming, that certainly makes my percentages go up.
So the Astros are now without A.J. Hinch. Luno is out of the building. How do you think that's going to affect them going forward this season and then future seasons to come?
I mean, it could go a couple different ways. I mean, as I said, they have a one of the best rosters in baseball right now without Jeff Luno and without A.J. Hinch. So this could very well bring these guys together, and they could play some really good baseball. That's certainly not putting that out of play here. But it's all going to really depend on how they're handling, because you know they're going to get to spring training. They're going to be asked a lot of questions about it. And you guys, having been in the locker room yourself, you know what that can do to a team over time. And it's a long season of baseball. And I'm sure there may be some distrust going around, you know, who's telling who, because that's something that nobody's really talking about is there's repercussions to this all the way around. I mean, for the guys who may have been the whistleblowers, they're going to have to deal with it. Guys around the league, in terms of how they look at the Astro players, they're going to be looked at differently. So it all really depends on how they handle it and how they come together once they get to spring training.
Radio.com Sports MLB Insider Tony Gwynn Jr. joining us on Houston Sports Leader Sports Radio 610. Tony, what's your take on the you know, a lot of people think this is just a slap on the wrist, man. A lot of people believe that the fact that no players were penalized or suspended essentially assures that moving forward, the Astros, Jim Crane, the owner, and the Astros, the team, they're going to be fine moving forward, and it's not really going to affect their ability to win 90 or 95 games. A lot of people feel like that's a slap on the wrist, man. Where do you sit as far as that opinion?
I don't know if I think it's a slap on the wrist. I mean, that's probably a little bit of an exaggeration. This is certainly a significant penalty. Could it have been stronger, in my opinion? Yeah, it could have been a little bit stronger in terms of draft. Now, I know the commissioner fined the Astros as much as they could via the collective bargain agreement, but it could have been stiffer, right? I mean, the salary that you were going to pay A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luhnow, that can be dispersed. The money you would have spent on a first and second rounder in 2020 and 2021, that now can be used for different things, but you still lose those players. So I don't want to poo-poo this penalty because it's certainly significant. I don't fall in line with it was a slap on the wrist.
Well, I think, Tony, I think the biggest problem, or at least in my opinion, as I see it, the biggest problem is the fact that no players were penalized. I'm not saying that they should have been, because hell, I don't know how you would do it without ruining an entire franchise and affecting multiple players that are with other franchises, which obviously is a nightmare for Major League Baseball. But just pertaining to the fact that players have not been penalized to this point, that's a pretty big statement.
That is, it's tough because, listen, as I said earlier, it'd be tough to figure out how to penalize them. Are you just going to penalize everybody because they were on the team? It's going to be hard. It'd be hard to convince me that every single player on the roster was cool with what was going on. Like, there had to be an outlier. There had to be a couple of them that felt differently about it. But you guys know as well as I do, in a team environment and you trying to survive, depending on your status, you might not be in a position to really say something, you know? So who knows what including Mike Fears, who we don't know what his motives were for wanting to tell it, to tell that this was going on in Houston. So the players certainly got away unscathed, and it is only due to the fact that it would be very difficult to punish the right people who took advantage of it, and know exactly how they benefited from it. So I think that's why the players end up getting off for no other reason.
Tony, Alex Cora was the bench coach at the time here in Houston. Of course, he left and went to the Boston Red Sox, won a World Series there. He's under investigation as well. How do you think things are going to shake out with Alex and also Carlos Beltran, who was, of course, a member of that team, and now he's the manager over with the Mets?
I mean, for Alex Cora, I don't think it's going to end well. But I also don't think, unlike Jeff Luhnow, I don't think he's going to throw anybody under the bus. I think if he's suspended, I think Alex will just probably go back to Puerto Rico and be the head of that academy that he was handling down there. But in terms of Carlos Beltran, I don't think anything happens to him because he was a player at the time. Regardless of, whether his name was in that report or not, it would be tough, once again, to penalize him because you don't know how he took advantage of it and if he took advantage of it.
Tony Gwynn Jr. joining us on Sports Radio 610, Houston Sports Leader. Tony, there's one thing, and I don't know what the hell can be said about it, man, but it's definitely one of those, I know as a former player, you and Wade, myself, and I mean, there's got to be something said about the guys that the pitchers that I mean, their careers were altered during this time, man. I mean, there was guys that contemplated retirement because of what happened versus the Astros. I mean, we can say that it was a difficult way to transfer information, but man, if it happens on three good pitches and they drop a bomb and a double and a bomb, that changes games and it changes careers, man. Where do you sit on those guys?
No doubt. I mean, we all, and rightfully so, focus on the Astros and the punishment handed down, but that's the other thing. I mean, legacies were affected. I mean, Clayton Kershaw, who in that 2017 playoff run had started to kind of change the narrative of him not being able to pitch well in big games, the Astro thing happens, and all of a sudden he's back there again. I mean, a guy like Yu Darvish was really struggling after that point because he didn't know if he was tipping pitches or whatnot. A guy like Andre Ethier retires. These are some of the teams that – I mean, a guy like Aaron Judge – possibly loses out on an MVP because, I mean, there's everything becomes into question and legacies are affected. And I think that's the thing that gets missed in all of this is that, it's really not being dramatic. Lives could have been affected during this time, whether it's some guy being sent down because he had a bad day against the Astros or somebody who can't quite get pulled up to the big leagues because somebody else is having a good year. So, It has so much bigger implications than just the game, than just the Astros. And I think that's why the punishment had to be so severe.
So the Astros got a big punishment as far as Major League Baseball came down hard on them. They're going to probably come down pretty hard on the Boston Red Sox. What do you think the ripple effect is going to be around the major leagues? How do you think this is going to affect all the other franchises? And do you think there are going to be other franchises that get similar punishments as more investigations go forward?
I mean, not unless something else comes to light, like the story that came, about with the Red Sox and the Astros. I don't see that happening. But I will say, I do think this could end up being a good thing for baseball because it kind of resets everybody's marker in terms of what's right and what's wrong. And GMs are going to be on top of their managers to make sure that things are being fall right because at the end of the day, they can lose their job over it. And so I think there could be some good that comes of it. You need these things. I mean, these things are terrible to go through at the time, but a lot of times they end up straightening out things that, kind of had some gray area to it. And you have a lot more people policing it that are within the game so that this doesn't ever happen again. So, I mean, I'm not stupid. the more technology we get, you know, everybody's going to continue to push the line. But sometimes you need a reset once you cross that line. I think that's where we're at in baseball right now.
Tony, moving forward, man, real quick, with the Astros, they got to go find a manager. They got to go find a GM. I mean, are there any names? Is there a short list, in your opinion, that should be considered or maybe a front runner at this point for those two positions?
The name that comes to mind really quickly is Dusty Baker. A guy that, you know, everybody loves to play for. You wouldn't have any issues in terms of integrity or anything like that. And, you know, he's a proven winner. He's a good manager. And it would probably be a really good landing spot for the Astros to have a manager like that, and would know how to handle the media, because whoever you bring on is going to have to deal with the media on a consistent basis. And unlike other years, it's going to be national media coverage of this because of the situation the Astros are in. So that's the name that comes to my mind immediately.
That's Tony Gwynn Jr. Tony, by the way, Tony, I feel like I need to tell you, man, your pops was my favorite, man. I had posters on my walls, brother, but he was my favorite, man. So it's a treat to have you on, but that's radio.com sports MLB insider Tony Gwynn Jr. Tony, man, we appreciate you coming on, brother, and giving us a few minutes of your time. I know you're a busy man.
All right, no problem. You guys have a good one.
You got it. Insider calls are brought to you by the new gas-powered Sprinter from Mercedes-Benz Vans. Wait, I couldn't let him get off. I couldn't let him go without Tony Gwynn was my dude now.
He was the man. You know what I mean? Tony Gwynn was one of those guys that always found a way to get on base. He always made good contact. He was like Yuli Gurriel on steroids.
Right.
But of right. course, Tony Gwynn wasn't part of that steroids era.
Right,
but
right.
I'm talking about the ability to consistently put the bat on the ball and to get on base, because he was just the ultimate hitter, man. And I loved everything about his game. He had a sweet stroke with that swing, man. And Tony Gwynn was one of the best to ever do it.
Anything in particular right there that stood out coming from a former MLB player to
Well, it was interesting that he mentioned Dusty Baker. That's a name that I haven't heard in a really long time. And I'd be interested to see how Houston and Astros fans would take that if it was Dusty Baker was the guy that ended up being the manager here. I don't know if that would be something that you kind of blasé about, like, oh, okay, whatever, or you'd be excited about, or you'd be totally against it. I'd be interested to hear feedback from fans if that would be somebody they like. And then also I love the fact that he made of there. He was sure there's guys in the clubhouse that did not like what was going on, but based off of their status in the organization, they probably didn't have the pull or – and I don't want to call it the guts, but it wasn't going to be smart on their part to try to take a stand against it, man. That's a legitimate point that I don't think hasn't been made up by many people discussing this whole situation.
As a third string quarterback in an organization, I ain't saying that 10. I ain't in it, baby. I'm out on that. Hey, Aikman, Cunningham, y'all do whatever y'all want to do. I'm out on that deal, man. So nonetheless, it was really, really good to have radio.com sports MLB insider Tony Gwynn joining us. That's some really good stuff. So regardless of Bill O'Brien's job status moving forward, we can chop it, we can cuss it, we can discuss it. No matter. It's irrelevant to this point. There's one thing that he'll never get beyond. Wade Smith and I'll talk about that next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.